Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in chapter 15 and verse 11. Last time we're talking about the law that God had issued through Moses during the time of the 7-year period, and the fact that this is going to be the year of release. That is a way to maintain the economy going instead of getting people into the poorhouse and creating cycles that are going to be very, very much contrary to the entirety of the economy and the nation, and creates a lot of problems. And had the nations of the earth followed in this commandment, in this law that God gave not only to his people Israel, and all those who are willing to walk in his path and have a life that is free of ills of the society that we find all around us, well, obviously life would have been different for the whole earth. And that was the purpose of Israel, to teach all nations of the earth that if you follow in our footsteps, everything is going to be okay for you too. Well, in either case, God is telling them here that on the 7th year, to make sure that everybody is taken care of, and when they approach the 7th year, not to say, well, the year of release is approaching, I don't think it's a good business to loan to anybody at this point. You see, God says don't do that. Because to begin with, if you fear God and remember that he owns heaven and earth and he possesses all things and it's all his, you see, you don't have to worry about it. He's going to make sure that you are taken care of. So there was no reason really for the children of Israel, except for covetousness and lack of faith, to act otherwise. And so this is what he's saying to them. In verse 4 he tells them first, howbeit there shall be no needy among you, for the Lord will surely bless you in the land which the Lord your God gives you for an inheritance to possess it. And then in verse 11 we read just the opposite, for the poor shall never cease out of the land. When you read it, you think that's a contradiction. What God is saying here, ideally, if you're going to be obedient to God, since God is going to give everybody a piece of land, there is no reason for anybody to be poor. But knowing human nature, you see, because people are not going to be obedient to God, therefore, because of that, there are going to be poor people. So it's not that it is a contradiction. It's just that God is, in essence, informing them, if you are going to be obedient, you're going to have abundance and plenty, and nobody's going to be sick, and nobody's going to be oppressed, and nobody's going to be in fear, and nobody's going to be barren, and so forth. But if you don't, obviously, you're going to have a lot of problems. And so with that in mind, then verse 11 is recorded. It's not that it is a contradiction. Moses didn't remember what he just said. So he says, for the poor shall never cease out of the land. That means because of your iniquities. And therefore I command you, saying, you shall surely open your hand unto your poor and needy brother in your land. Because if you don't do it, you see, even though that originally I didn't really mean for anybody to go through this kind of hardship, you see, after all, when he created man, he placed him in the Garden of Eden. Man never had to worry about retirement, about old age, or about making ends meet during his lifetime. You see, everything was provided. God was taking care of all that. But since man did not, he ended up working by the sweat of his brow in order to produce bread. Worked hard. God didn't mean for that to happen. And God didn't mean for people to become poor. You see, but God is not going to stop people from transgressing his law. He's not going to control their minds and enforce a police state. And so what we are reading here is consequences. So now God says, now that we have these consequences, how are we going to behave under the circumstances? And that's what God says here. You are going to have poor people, but I command you to take care of them. You see, in spite of the fact that what they've done may not be right, that got themselves into the poorhouse, and could be all kind of reasons, yet this is a safety net. And there are a lot of people that say, and unfortunately you generally find them on the right, that say, well, you want to get a job, you want to get your needs for the family and all that, work hard. They say, and if you don't, that's your problem, tough luck, I'm not going to help you. That's not what God said. That people, for whatever reason, end up in that condition, And it is your obligation to love your friend, your family member, those around you, as yourself. And you cannot use the excuse, well, they're not working hard. You see? They may have all kinds of reasons for not working hard. They may not be good reasons, but some of them may be. You see? And some of them may be because of the society, because the way it turned out to be. And some may be because of their parents, or because this, or because of that. You know, some orphans, well, because the father died. You know, all kinds of reasons. Or the father was lazy, you know, was a drunkard, glutton, whatever it may be. And now they're paying the penalty, and the wife is paying the penalty. So what? You're going to let them just go down the drain like that and remember in that, you know, remain in that condition? Obviously not. You see, the law of God is the law of love. In spite of all of our sins and iniquities, God doesn't say, okay, well, let's get rid of them. You see, He was willing to go all the way to the cross to give His life for us. Which one of us deserves it? You see? So we have to think about it from God's point of view. And this is not an old thing. The same conditions still exist to this very day. For all kind of reasons, there are people who are not doing well economically. They may not be doing well many other ways. Maybe there is a sickness in the family or whatever it may be. You know, didn't get good education. Things like that. What do the others that are doing well supposed to do under these conditions? Say, well, tough luck. You see? That's unfortunately the nature of the party on the right. And yet to the party on the left, you know, they call them Democrats today, and Republicans, they generally are more on the compassionate side. That's why they have more social programs. But God is not interested in Republicans or Democrats. God is interested in righteousness, in love, in mercy, in kindness, in forgiveness, in patience, in long-suffering, in helping your neighbor get on their knees. You see? And when the conditions have already been created that brought people to this condition of poverty, whatever it may be, well, the others should help them to get back on their feet so things can get better. After all, it's for their own good to begin with. If there are a lot of people who are poor, well, that creates a cycle of poverty and creates a cycle of crime and things like that, and all the rest end up paying for it anyway. So why not help the problem to begin with where it is even much cheaper? And that's what God is trying to teach His people, to avoid all these problems. And if they got into them, what to do under the circumstances. And to this very day, these things are applicable. And so God says, I command you. It's not something that you do out of the goodness of your heart, you see. And if you want to, you do it. If you don't want to, you don't have to do it. No, God says, I command you, regardless of the reasons why those people got themselves into that condition. Help them. And so that's what He's saying here. If your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, be sold unto you. What does it mean, sold unto you? You see, slavery was in existence there, but what is slavery? They say the word in Hebrew for slave is worker. And that means you've got to work. Now, isn't that what all of us who do not have our own businesses do? We all go to work. We go and hire ourselves. You see, we either sign contracts, or we just hire ourselves, you know, for a job. That's all what we are doing. We're selling ourselves into slavery. In other words, to work. A lot of people don't understand slavery. Now, there is the wrong kind of slavery. When people went to war and you know, they took the prisoners, and whether they liked it or not, they made them slaves in spite of whatever they desire to do. That's a different kind of slavery. And oftentimes, if people were evil, they mistreated them, but if they were not, you know, they just used the fact that they were able to buy them and, you know, they just help them in the farm. Didn't have to be evil toward them. But in this case, obviously the slavery that God allowed within His community of Israel is a different type of slavery. It's a slavery with dignity. That means just treat them as a hired, you know, worker. That's all. Treat them well. And then at the end of a certain period of time, you make sure that they are able to get on their feet by giving them, you know, what you may call to their severance pay. And that's only after 7 years. And so that's what He's saying here. If your brother, a Hebrew man, or a Hebrew woman, be sold unto you, he shall serve you 6 years. Only six. And in the seventh year, you shall let him go free from you. You see? In other words, he needs to sell himself, in other words, to hire himself to get a job, because on his own he cannot make it for whatever reason. His land may not be producing enough. He may have debts. Somebody may have died in the family. The boys and the girls have to sell themselves or whatever. It could be all kind of reasons for it. And that's what God tells them to do. What do you do under the circumstances when things go wrong in a family? And things always go wrong, unfortunately. So he said, for 6 years, he's going to work for you. Don't keep him beyond that point. Then let him go free. And when you let him go free from you, you shall not let him go empty. That's the law of God. You see? One sense you might say severance pay or retirement or money, whatever it may be, that's a law of God. Why? Because if people have been in this condition all this time, they'll be able to, find it, that is, they'll find it difficult to stand on their feet. And God wants for everybody to be independent, and you need a push. You see? That's an economic decision based on love. And God says that's a command. If you disobey this command, it's going to create a lot of bad circumstances that are going to affect you to begin with. So it's not good business, you see. It's not good economy to do it otherwise. And when people understand that, then they realize this is not just a matter of spirituality. This is not just a matter of religion. This is not just a matter of, I believe in God or I don't believe in God. This is a matter that a healthy society needs that. A healthy economy needs that. You see, a crime-free society needs that, or else it would not be, and so forth. So the laws of God cover many, many aspects of life, and they're all for the benefit and the good, not only of the individual, but the entirety of the society. And again, because people are not willing to obey the law of God, the whole world is in a big mess, and therefore we need the kingdom of God to enforce these laws. And in the future, also in the millennium, they are going to be slaves, because we have many scriptures that tell us that they are going to be slaves. Especially Israel is going to have slaves. First, it is the enemies that have enslaved Israel. They're going to be slaves of Israel. But then again, throughout this entirety of the earth, if people, for whatever reason, are not, as diligent as they should be, and they get to the point where they are not able to stand on their own feet, these laws will take care of that. And these laws will continue. And these are the very laws of the new covenant as they were of the old covenant. They haven't changed, and that's what God said. When I make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, I'm going to put my laws. These are the laws he's talking about, all of them. I'm not talking only about the 10. You see, you need all these laws to maintain a society in a healthy state. And so this is what we read here. And when you let him go free from you, you shall not let him go empty or her. You shall furnish him liberally. You see? Some people say, I'm conservative. You're liberal, That means you liberalize everything. It's not a question of conservative or liberal. It's a question of what is right. There is a time to be liberal. There is a time to be conservative. There is a time to be this, or there is a time to be that. All depends on the circumstances. And for when some people say, I'm only this and not that, that means you're off base. That means that your character is not stable, you see? Because sometimes you need to be liberal. You cannot be frugal all the time, and you think, that's the way I made it, If you don't do it that way, that's your problem. I'm going to help you. No? When the time comes to be liberal, you better be liberal. When the time comes to be conservative, you better be conservative. That means you conserve, you see? Winter is coming, summertime you conserve. You don't spend it all, so you have enough for winter. But, there are times to be liberal. Give abundantly, you have received abundantly, you give abundantly. And this is the nature of God. He's not always this way or that way. Based on the needs, he'll either be very liberal toward you, or if we are the kind of people who are very stingy, God is going to be stingy with us. You see, if you want to be only conservative, God is going to be conservative with us in his mercy, in his love, in his blessings. And obviously we don't want that. And a lot of people are hypocrites to the core, and they don't even realize that, what their nature and character is doing to others and to themselves. And they think that they are righteous people. You know, the conservative think they are righteous, the liberal think they are righteous. Instead of following the law of God, that will tell you when to be liberal, when to be conservative. And that's what Moses says. This is the law. You don't go to the right, you don't go to the left. You follow it. And if it takes you into the liberal area, you are with it. And if it takes you to the conservative area, you go with it. That means when there is a need to be, this way or that way. And so he says, you shall furnish him liberally out of your flock and out of your threshing floor and out of your wine press of that wherewith the Lord your God has blessed you. See, remember where it came from. It's not yours. Some people may say, well, I worked hard for it. Oh, yeah, you worked hard for it. Where did you get the energy from? Who gave you the air to breathe? Who made the earth, you know, produce abundantly so you can have plenty? You see how selfish people are? They're not thinking through what they're saying. If not for God, we will have absolutely nothing. To begin with, He gave us life. We've got nothing that belongs to us. All belongs to God. And that's what God is trying to get into our thick skull. And people who don't understand it, well, they end up paying the consequences and the penalty. And they don't really get ahead because oftentimes the people who accumulate to themselves, who hoard to themselves, well, what is it that God does now and then? He takes it away from them and gives it to others. So they didn't get anything by that. Just like the man that said, the parable that Christ gave, a person that was rich, was doing great, well, very diligent, hard working, which is all good and nice, but selfish, stingy, conservative, unwilling to give to others, not a liberal person. You see? Like the story of Lazarus and the rich man. That man was not a liberal person, didn't care about the poor, but Lazarus. And this man in the parable has so much, and he's speaking to himself, you know, he's patting himself on the back, and he's talking about all this harvest that he has and all the crops, and he thinks, well, you know, so look at all that you have. You've got to build, you know, more barns so you can put it all in it. You see? And he was not rich toward God, and he was not rich toward the poor. What is it that God says to him in the parable? You know, you miserable soul. This night your soul is going to be taken away from you, you wicked person. You want to keep it all to yourself? And you don't think about your neighbors? And those in need, you know, they have no need, they have no need. Different story. You see? But obviously, people are not always equal in their abilities and diligence and strength and whatever it may be. So all kind of conditions are created, which gives all of us opportunities to help others, to serve others in the process to develop the character of God. You see? That's why God doesn't make sure that everybody is rich, or everybody is healthy, or everybody is well. It gives all of us the opportunity to care for the poor, and for the infirmed, and for those who are not capable of doing for themselves, as we are, and therefore we help them. That's how we develop the nature of God. Otherwise, if everybody is doing well and perfect and healthy and all that, you know, there would be nothing to develop character with. No reasons. No opportunities. So that's the reason why God allows all these things also, you know, widows and poverty and sickness and things like that. Not that He does it deliberately for people like that, but, you know, He allows the circumstances to continue, and He does not solve them for us. But He wants us to look around, look for those people, search them out, take care of them. In the process, we do ourselves a lot of good, and we heap a lot of treasures for ourselves in heaven. So, you know, we have to consider the whole thing. And all of us have to examine ourselves and see where we are in these matters. And so this is what God is saying here. Because the Lord your God blessed you, you shall give unto Him. You see? Some people say, why should I give it unto Him? I worked hard, He doesn't. Well, because God blessed you, He gave it to you to begin with. And He commands you to do it. And it's not out of the goodness of your heart, or because, you know, you've got to get a plaque that will say and tell everybody that you have donated. That's not the reason to donate or give. It's because you remember and realize where it came from and what is the commandment of God. You see, that's how you manage the blessings that God gave you wisely. You know, you make sure that your family is taken care of, but you also, according to the law of God and to please God, you make sure that those around you, whenever you can help them, are also doing well. It's good for them and it's good for you. You see, in that way we become the sons of our Father which is in heaven, who gives his sunshine, as Jesus Christ said, to the righteous and the unrighteous. So you cannot say, well, you know, he was lazy, he's not doing his job, and things like that. You know, why should I care about his family if they're hungry? You see, that's a selfish nature, and that's not of God, that's of the devil. And that's what he's saying here. You give to him because God gave it to you to begin with. And you shall remember that you were a bondman in the land of Egypt. Just remember in what condition you were and what stinking, you know, hole you were, and God pulled you out of it. You didn't have to do it. You see? So he's giving them those examples to make them understand why they have to do that. Why they have to behave in this manner. You know, I used to be in the ditch, you know. My neighbor is not in it, for whatever reason. And I know how it feels, so I should help him. And that's what he's saying here. You just remember in what condition you used to be. You know, you were a bondman in the land of Egypt, a slave to others, and you didn't get paid there. You know, the Egyptians didn't pay you for it, no wages. They couldn't care less about you. They didn't care about the law of God. They had no mercy and compassion for you. They didn't care about the misery in which you were, and your family, and the poverty, and the hunger, you see. Don't be like them, you see, because otherwise God would have no reason to bring you out of bondage. If that's the kind of people you're going to be. But he brought a nation of slaves to teach them how to behave like kings, not slaves. Royal priesthood, you see. Pattern after the very nature of God himself. And so this is what he's saying here. You just remember that. And this statement was repeated many times throughout the law of Moses. In other words, remember how it feels. You see? That's why God reminded them that every occasion, even with the beginning of the Ten Commandments, the ten words, that is, the oracles, he told them that, I am the Lord your God that brought you out of the land of Egypt. And many times he said, you see, because I brought you out of the land of Egypt, therefore you shall remember to do this or do that. That's what he's saying here. You shall remember that you were a bondman in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you, therefore I command you. It's not a suggestion, it's not if you feel like it. I command you to do this thing today. Whether you like it or not, it's neither here nor there. You know, if you are the kind of a person that God has to command you to do it because it's not in your nature to do it to begin with, that's a shame, you see, on you, that you have to be commanded to do good instead of desiring to do good without being told. A lot of people are that way, unfortunately, and that's a rebuke, you see. That shows something terribly wrong about you when God has to command you to do it. Just like you sit around the table and you have a lot of food on your plate, and somebody sits next to you and he has very little or hardly anything, and God has to command you to give him some. That's your shame. That means you're hoarding to yourself. You're selfish, whatever. You don't care about anybody, you see. So there are times that when we obey God because God commanded us, that means that there is something terribly sick about us, that we need to be commanded to even do that. When some people are sick and we need to be commanded to go visit them, that's something terrible that we need to be commanded. We should do it by law, by nature. That's what Paul was saying about Timothy. In contrast to all the leaders in the church, the ministers. He said, concerning Timothy, I have no man of like mind like Timothy who by nature, you see, natural affection will care for you. As for the rest, he said, all seek their own. You see, they're selfish rats. That's in essence what he was saying about them. Ministers, imagine that, the leaders of the church who should care about people, and he said, they care about themselves. They don't seek the things of Christ, he said, but the things, you know, their own things. Yeah, you know, just seek their own. So sometimes when we have to do things, and when somebody has to prod us to do things, it be in a congregation, in a group setting, whatever it may be, we should be ashamed of ourselves that we have to even be commanded or reminded of doing certain things that by nature, a natural affection, a person has not been corrupted by selfishness and covetousness and greed. You see? We should do all those things without even being told. I don't know, we should be the one to exhort ourselves, to admonish ourselves, to rebuke ourselves, and sharply at times, if we see ourselves, behaving like just a rat. You see? And unfortunately, a lot of people are that way. And all of us, to one degree or the other, we're all selfish by nature. You see, we're not affectionate by nature, and so we have to work on that without being told. Well, in other case, God is giving commandments to people who are carnal-minded and obviously don't care much about each other, and so a lot of these commandments that He gave them, had they been doing it by nature, they would not be needed to say that, just like the Apostle Paul said. The law is not made for the righteous. And why is it not made for the righteous? For the simple reason, the righteous does it already, naturally. He doesn't have to be told to do that, but when you got people who don't do it by nature, well, then you need a law to tell them. And just like some people say, when there is something wrong around, they say, well, there's got to be a law. You see? When they forget about their own conduct and behavior, they just think about others. And so this is what God is telling them. I command you to do it. Do this, today, not tomorrow. Not postpone it. Today, do it now, while you think about it. And it shall be, verse 16, if he say unto you, I will not go, that is the slave that you have, the worker that you have, I will not go out from you, because he loves you and your house, because he fares well with you. Imagine that. You're such a good person. And that person knows that, on his own he cannot handle it. And he loves you so much, that's again to your credit, that anybody would even tell you that. Where it is natural for a person to want to go back and sin on his own feet. Well, if this person is willing to say that to get to that point, well, that says an awful lot of good about you. Speaks very well of you. So, if you have a person like that, what is it that you do at this point? In verse 17, and then you shall take an owl and thrust it through his ear and into the door, and he shall be your bondman, your slave, that is, forever. And if you have a case like that, obviously there aren't going to be many cases like that, but this is what happens. Well, God gives you also an instruction what to do under this case. So you don't need to decide what to do under this case or that case, whatever it may be. You're governed by on every step of your life, and whatever you do, you are governed by a law of love, the law of God. And every law that God gave Israel is a law of love, even though sometimes, people may not see it as such. Because we as human beings, we don't always understand the nature of love. We think that we do. And many things that we do oftentimes are to our own hurt or the hurt of others, and we don't realize that. But every single law that God gave us is a part of the royal law. It's the law of love. It teaches us how to love our Creator and how to love our fellow men. And so this is what he says here, and also unto your bondmen you shall do likewise, that is, bondwoman, any one of them. It shall not seem hard unto you when you let him go free from you, that is, if he wants to go free, for to the double of the hire of the hireling has he served you 6 years, and the Lord your God will bless you in all that you do. In other words, don't get those bad feelings. Well, I'm going to lose a worker. What am I going to do now? Don't feel that way. Because when you obey God, and you do it from the heart, not grudgingly, God will make sure that you are taken care of. And you're going to be abundantly blessed. And things will go with you. So God is always working with them on this basis. You see? That whatever law you need to obey, don't think that it is a law to your own hurt that God gives you. Because it's a law of love. And as Paul said, love does no harm to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law, the Torah. You see? And so if you obey the law of God, it's not going to be to your harm, to your hurt. It's not going to do you harm. Because God watches all things. And people who walk in love, God takes care of them one way or the other. In other words, it was a way that Israel had to travel that required faith. You see, some people think faith came only in the New Testament. No, all of Israel had to live by faith. That if I would obey the law of God, God will take care of me. And so they depended on Him and trusted in Him and waited on Him. And as long as they did it, things went well. And when they didn't, obviously, things began to unravel and the society crumbled and the cycle of poverty and the cycle of crime and all that began, and they afflicted everybody. You see, and to this very day we're afflicted by that and we don't realize why, and nobody wants to go back to the law of God. And the people of this land, in specific the nation of America, were the forefathers and fully understood and comprehended the link and the end results, you see, that a nation may have, because they've experienced that before that under the British and other places in Europe. They realize that unless you obey the law of God, unless you walk by the word of God, unless you are governed by the Bible, as many of them said, that a nation, or this democracy, if it is not governed by the Bible, it would not be able to stand. It cannot function properly, you see. And that's why they felt at the time that the only way this nation is going to function, if it lives by the, you know, the principles, well, some of them put it this way, by the principles of Christ, you see. And of course, they were not aware of the reality, because they obviously were not in the light totally, you know, they had partial knowledge, that the principles of Christ are the principles of Moses, because Christ is the one that spoke to Moses. He's the God of Israel. But of course, that false religion called Christianity never understood it and still doesn't to this very day. They think, you know, they're two different gods. That's the reason why they despise the law of God. I think that's old stuff. It's not good for us. We don't need it. They don't realize that's the doctrine of Christ. This is the law of liberty. This is the royal law. This is what makes life possible, you see, not only just to make a living, but glorious life. That's why this Jesus Christ, the God of Israel, said, unless you remember the law of Moses, my servant, you're all dead. I'm going to bring utter destruction on all of you. Because there is no way for life to be happy and healthy and joyous and good and all the good things that people want without the law that He gave Moses, because that's the law that He introduced in the Garden of Eden to all mankind. That's the law that He wanted Israel to teach all of humanity, and Israel will when the time comes. You see, there is no other law. So whatever He gave later on in person, that was a magnification of this very law. Not something to supersede this law, but amplifying it, magnifying it. You see? And that's the reason why those who are in ignorance and think they are in the light and think that they are and are Christians and they are not, just calling upon the name of Christ doesn't mean anything. You see? Just believing in Him doesn't mean anything. The devil believes that Christ is Christ. He's the Savior of the world. But he does not obey. He believes in God, but he does not obey He and all of his demons. You see? A lot of people out there, as evil as they can be, and they believe that, you know, there is a God. But they couldn't care less about His law. You see? This is the law that God speaks about. That unless we live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God, there will be no life in us. Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood. This is what Christ is talking about, the law of Moses. And all the amplification that came by the prophets, and then Himself, and then the disciples. It's all one. There's nothing else. You see? And because we are not abiding by this law of Moses, well, that's what you saw in the past 2,000 years in the so-called world of Christianity. A lot of crime and war and poverty and hatred and malice and darkness and wickedness and immorality and evil and so forth. All of these are results of disobedience to the law of Moses, the law of God, the law of Jesus Christ, the law of the apostles. It's all the same. The law of the prophets. And that's why we pray for the kingdom of God to come and restore the authority of God on this earth through His law. How is He going to govern the world, you know, without a law? How is He going to sit on the house of Jacob, that is, you know, on the house of David, I'm sorry, on the throne of David, and rule the whole house of Jacob and then the whole earth? You see? He made it very plain how. By putting His law, this law, Moses, in the heart of people. So they would obey the letter and the spirit of the law to its fullness. And then utopia will be the result. You see, it's not hocus pocus. And so this is what we read here. So, God will bless you in everything that you do. You don't need to worry about it, you know. When people have no fear of God, do not walk with God, have no faith in God, they do not obey God, well, obviously, then, you know, they fear of doing good. Because they're thinking, if I'll give it to him, what am I going to be left with? Verse 19, all the firstling males that are born of your herd and of your flock, that's another law, you shall sanctify unto the Lord your God. You shall do no work with the firstling of your ox, nor shear the firstling of your flock. You see? That's what he told them. The first, you know, or the firstborn of everything, and that's not necessarily a good law because, you know, the first ox, you know, a lot of strength in those things. But then again, God gave them also, he gave Israel certain laws that were not necessarily the best for them. As you mentioned, we mentioned that earlier in the prophets. For example, you find in the community of, you know, the so-called Christian community, where for centuries they took the firstborn and put him in the priesthood, you see. That means he never had children. That means he never passed on, you know, the genes and chromosomes of the firstborn, you know, whether it's greater intelligence there and strength and all that. And then they took the secondborn and sent him to the army. And so they decimated, you know, the cream of the crop of the family, and they degenerated generation after generation. That's in the so-called world of Christianity. On the other hand, in the Jewish community, the firstborn, if he became a rabbi, he still had children, you see. And the secondborn didn't go to the army, and so the intelligence remained within the family. And if people wonder, why is it, you know, there is so much intelligence in the Jewish community, that's the reason for it. And while on the other hand, you know, the non-Jewish community, you know, so-called Christian community didn't do as well, that's the reason for it, you see. And so this law, in essence, is not really a good law to take the firstling, you know, of the males and sacrifice it, you see, because, you know, it's the cream of the crop, and they cannot generate, you know, there is regenerate that way, and they cannot, you cannot use them for you know, improving the species, so to speak, if you sacrifice them. And at this point, obviously, you don't read that, but later on, God is explaining that, you know, I cause them to be defiled by their own sacrifices by making them, you know, sacrifice the firstborn. And anyway, it's because of disobedience on the part of Israel. So, you know, some laws, you know, you would never know why they were given until you study the whole matter and, you know, and know the whole subject, and then you can come back to it and have a better understanding of it. And so this is what we read here. All the firstling males that are born of your herd and of your flock, you shall sanctify unto the Lord your God. You shall do no work with the firstling of your ox, nor shear the firstling of your flock. You shall eat it before the Lord your God, year by year, in the place which the Lord shall choose, you and your household. You see? Well, in doing so, you have decimated the cream of the crop of your flocks. That's what God said later on. That's not a good law. But I gave it to them because of their wickedness. So this was not a blessing to do this. You see, this is a punishment in essence that God inflicted upon Israel. That's what later on the apostle said when it came to the issue of circumcision in Acts 15. As Peter was saying, you know, we had a lot of laws that were a great burden over us and we couldn't bear it. You see? That's because God imposed on them because of the rebellion, rebellious heart, unwillingness to obey from the heart. He gave them certain laws that were not good for them. And yet he said, we're stuck with it. You see, once God issues those certain laws, that's it. You've got to be in captivity, so to speak, in this area. Just like he told them, you want a king, you don't want me to rule over you. Okay, I'm going to, you know, give you a king. You're going to have a government. And the government, you know, is going to become a huge bureaucracy, and they're going to be taking and taking and taking from you, and you'll be crying to me at that point, and I'm not going to listen to you. You wanted it, you get it. Tough luck. You made your bed, now, you know, you sleep in it. So, you know, certain things that God gave his people, it's not because of their righteousness, but because of their evil heart, their wickedness. So let's understand also the nature of the law. Certain things that God gave us, just like, you know, the creation that you see all around you, why do we have thorns and thistles and, you know, all kind of things like that? that are destructive. And some creatures, you know, that all constantly devour our crops. They say that was a curse and God brought upon the face of the earth because of the wickedness of men. And they're going to be there, and God is not going to remove them. You see? Until the kingdom is set on this earth, and then God will destroy all those things. And there isn't going to be any more devouring and destruction and sickness and disease and viruses and germs, you know, to consume our lives and our flesh. You see? All these things are a part of the law of God. You know, God set them in motion because of evil. And so this is one of those laws here. Of course, at this point, as I mentioned, you would not know it. But when you study the whole story, then you will find out why this law and why that law, at least in many cases, if not in all. Verse 21, and if there be any blemish therein, lameness or blindness, any ill blemish whatsoever, you shall not sacrifice it unto the Lord your God. Well, in this case, it is spared. And you shall eat it within your gates. In either case, you have to kill it. You see? You still cannot keep it, even though it is the cream of the crop. So if it has a blemish, you kill it within your gates. In other words, use it for lunch, not for a sacrifice. You see, the sacrifices were supposed to be brought to the temple or the tabernacle before that. But if you want to eat just, you know, regular meals, it has nothing to do with religious or spiritual meaning, well, you kill it in your own gates and there you eat it. And in either case, you know, you decimate all the firstborn. That's not a good law. You see, any farmer, and most of us who are not farmers may not appreciate that, but any farmer knows that. The firstborn is the cream of the crop. And those who knows about genetics and, you know, the human strength within the family and the society know also about the firstborn. It's not a good idea to get rid of the firstborn, you know, either in the priesthood or become celibate or in the army, whatever it may be. That's the worst thing you can do to your family, you see. That affects very much in an adverse manner the level of intelligence of the family and the strength of the family. And so verse 22 we read, again, you shall eat it within your gates. The unclean and the clean shall eat it alike. In other words, those among you who are not clean ceremonially, you know, you are defiled, everybody can eat it because this is not a sacrifice. You see, a sacrifice, only the clean was allowed to eat it. But this is just a meal, you know, just food. Anybody can eat it. That's what he's saying here. The unclean and the clean may eat it alike, as a gazelle and as a hart. Well, he gives all these different examples. In other words, just like you go hunting for a gazelle and a hart, you see, people did not raise gazelles and harts, but they raised sheep. But just like you go hunting and you picked up something, this is not for a sacrifice, it's just for eating, for food. Well, that's the way it should be treated, he says. And that's why he's using these animals that are not domesticated animals as an example. Verse 23, only you shall not eat the blood thereof. You shall pour it out upon the ground as water. A lot of people do not obey this commandment, and a lot of the germs are being passed on, and they drink it. You know, they have the blood pudding and things like that. There are many nations that do it to their own hurt. They don't realize the curses that they bring upon themselves by doing it. And God says, don't ever do it. This is what the life is in the blood, and you pour it to the ground. And a lot of people that understand that it's not healthy, you see. And therefore, many people go to a kosher butcher shop, you know, to get kosher food just for that. That is kosher meat. Because they know that the blood is properly, that is, and there is no blood in it. And then we go to chapter 16 and verse 1. Observe the month of Aviv, that is the spring. Aviv means spring, and that's Nisan, the first month. And keep the Passover. See, that's the law of Christ. Keep the Passover, not keep Easter. Easter has nothing to do with the law of God. You see, it has to do with Ishtar, a goddess, a Canaanite goddess, and many others that worship that in different names, by different names in different lands. You see, and Easter is one of them. Ishtar, you know, different appellations of that word, of that name. It says, you keep the Passover unto the Lord your God. You see, Christ is our Passover. Christ is not our Easter. It never dawns on those people to think that way. I don't know what they're doing. For in the month of Aviv, the Lord your God brought you forth out of the land of Egypt by night. You see? It was at night that the death angel passed and killed all the firstborn of Egypt. And it was at that point, immediately after midnight, that the Egyptians rushed to the homes of the Israelites. I mean, they all lived together, many of them around there. And then Pharaoh made sure that they all get out of the land before, you know, everybody is dead. They were really afraid. So it was by night in the sense that it was right past midnight. Until midnight, they were not able to get out of the house, you see. And a minute past midnight, it's already morning. You know, you can say either 1 o'clock in the morning or you can say 1 o'clock at night. You know, it goes both ways. And some people are confused by this terminology. And they think that Israel did not leave until daybreak. And that's not true. Immediately as midnight was over, the death angel passed over Egypt. That's when they began to move. That's why he told them that when you eat the meal, you eat it already. You know, you got your stuff in your hand, you know, your hat, so to speak, on your head, and you know, your bag, you know, on your back, your sandals and your shoes. Get ready. That is, your sandals on your feet, and or your shoes, whatever you wore. And that was the intent, because as soon. Well, anyway, we're going to stop at this point again. Mordecai Joseph, greetings to all of God's people until the next lesson.